We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the RotoViz College Football Show. I'm your host, Stefan Lacoe. Sitting here with me is the one, the only Matt Wispay. This podcast is being brought to you by the good people at MyBookie. Matt, how are you doing on this beautiful Thursday afternoon slash early evening?
I'm as good as I can be after an Ohio State commitment flips to a terrible Pac-12 school.
Yeah, how did you feel about that? How did you feel about signing day in general? What did you think?
I love signing day.
Were you getting excited?
I spent a lot of my day with the CBS Sports HQ feed going through and just going over all the different picks and scrolling through. I have a college football recruiting list that I kind of look at throughout the day, which won't even lie is incredibly Buckeye heavy, but I like knowing other schools, but it pretty much is Buckeye info.
Sure, that makes sense.
And it's always a fun experience because for as much as lower program schools don't like to admit this, national championships are kind of won on recruiting days. Yes, the players need to develop. Yes, five stars bust all the time. But if you look at the teams in the top six of the team rankings right now, you'll notice that there are a lot of national championship contenders. So, I mean, it's fun. And I mean, other than one lost commit in a class, I won't ever really be that upset about.
Right. What did you think about the day in general? Any big surprises for you? Anything that any big takeaways?
I mean, LSU had a chance to be the number one overall class. They going into the day, you would have thought that LSU was the favorite to finish with the top class. And I mean, first it was Rakim Jarrett, which I'm going to be honest with you, it didn't even cross my mind that Rakim Jarrett would flip. That guy I thought was locked and loaded. I know there was times mid-season when he was kind of like iffy with the program, but every time you would hear something out of his camp, it would sound like, nah, we're doing our like due diligence on stuff, but we're signing with this program. And with the way they made recruits look this year and their five stars look, I thought they got him. It's guaranteed. And then he flipped to Maryland, and then they lost Jermaine Burton, I think is his name. They lost him at the end of the day. So LSU, I mean, I was floored to see them have a bad day. And then, I mean, you were upset. I like that you started off our show doc with we lost out on Stroud and Johnny Wilson. And
well, it was early in the day before the rest of the news.
I'm sorry. You already had Noah Sewell in your class.
Yeah.
I heard the two defensive players, Justin Flo and Noah Sewell, that you guys had, I heard them compared to, it's like if you got Devin White and Reuben Foster in the same class. Wah, yeah. Wah. You guys got Kayvon Thibodeau last year. Your defense is going to be dynamic.
Right.
So I think they had a great day. And yeah, I mean, USC.
That was a big one for me. Like, they are, what, like around the 50th school right now?
Are they that high? They were at one point below Bowling Green, which made me giggle.
Yeah, I thought they got up to 46, but maybe it was 76. Maybe
let me see.
Maybe
let's see what their current team ranking is.
Yeah, correct. I was driving back over the mountains yesterday. We had to make a little emergency trip over the mountains to see family, and so yeah, I was in the car for 6 hours yesterday. My wife was driving, and so I was just on my phone, like keeping up with everything and watching way too many Justin Flo highlights. Man, that boy can hit.
Yeah, he can
hit so hard. But yeah, I thought Oregon had a great day. We 79th, also signed their what?
By the way, USC is 79th. They're last 79th. In the Pac-12.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that's not great. But we also, Oregon also signed a couple of quarterbacks. They got a guy out of Alabama, Ashford, who I'm excited about. It'll be fun. It'll be fun to see what happens. It's always, you know, I get really excited. And then for Oregon, they don't often play a ton of freshmen, you know, so it's wait and see. And
I think you'll see one of Flo or Sewell next year.
Yes, I think that's true. And there's going to be some room in that linebacker room for them to really express themselves, which will be really, really fun. I thought it's always a fun day for me. I'm an avid, I've talked about this numerous times in the show. I love like the old school NCAA football games on the old Xbox 360, you know, and my favorite part of that game is like the recruiting. The game itself is fine, but the recruiting is really where it's at. So I really nerd out on signing day. It's a lot of fun for me. So it's just time to nerd out a little bit and get excited about a bunch of high school seniors, which is really weird.
And
what do you think?
Since we are a fantasy show, I do think we should talk a little bit about some of the guys who we think have the potential to make a jump. It's going to sound biased, but Julian Fleming looks like one of the better receivers that have come out of high school in a long time. He committed to Ohio State. They think he's going to be an instant impact type player. If he does break out next year, keep an eye on him because that'll be a type of guy that you want to get. The two top quarterbacks in this class are, DJ Longalele, who went to Clemson. He'll sit next year, but they kind of tagged him as the next great quarterback prospect. And then the other one went to Alabama, and that is Bryce Young. He's a dual threat quarterback.
Yeah.
He's a little short for my preference, but at the same time, we've seen shorter quarterbacks find success in the NFL. And then running back wise, I wish you went to a different program because I just hate the way they use running backs right now. But Bijan Robinson, he went to Texas over in Ohio State. But he is my favorite running back in this class. He looks like he is very capable with his hands and could become a very quality pass catching running back. And that's always something to look forward to. And then we mentioned him earlier. I do think Rakim Jarrett has the potential to become the next Stephon Diggs at Maryland.
Yeah, I was surprised he went to Maryland. It seemed like a bit of a shock to me. But hey,
Loxley can recruit.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I also wanted to touch just a little bit. Not in the show doc, so I'm going to just spur of the moment here. Both our teams lost a coordinator to an, you know, coaching openings in other places. How do you feel about that? Some of the big D coordinator for you guys. Moving on,
had we had him, had he not taken this Boston College job, we would not have had this player flip to Utah. The kid came out today and said the number one reason he flipped to Utah was because they had coaching staff stability and Ohio State had just lost the guy who recruited him. So disappointed. Jeff Hafley was the number three recruiter in all the college football, according to 24/7's recruiter rankings. He had brought in six commitments to the class. He was our defensive back coach. I really liked him. He was a young, high energy guy that was, he kind of came out of nowhere. When we brought him on, there was a lot of hand-wringing about, oh, we're supposed to get guys that are established. We're not supposed to be looking for guys looking for their first opportunity. But he proved everyone wrong and, I mean, turned around a defense that really struggled the prior year. So disappointed to see him go. But honestly, when you get a pro or when you get a head coaching job at a school that you have familiarity with, which he's familiar with the Boston College program, and he wanted to be on the East Coast, good for him. I think it's a tough job. And it's going to be interesting to see because he's probably going to have to like make his mark in New Jersey, which is slowly becoming a crowded area. And if he's able to pull talent out of New Jersey and Western Pennsylvania, he'll find success.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. The Northeast really is a difficult place for, or can be a difficult place for recruiting. I lived in Connecticut for a long time and UConn for a while there was doing pretty well. And now they're one of the worst teams in the country. It's just really hard. Once you lose a really good coach, it's hard to get players to come up there. But yeah, hopefully he'll be able to make some movement there. And then Marcus Arroyo, offensive coordinator for my Oregon Ducks, is also on his way out. He took the head coaching job at UNLV. That'll be interesting. As a Ducks fan, I don't mind so much. I kind of felt like, I mean, we've talked about this a lot. I felt like the Ducks offense kind of underwhelmed this year. I was, you know, not entirely impressed with what the offense was with Herbert being there and that offensive line and some talented running backs. I know our wide receiver core was thin, especially early in the year before Juwan Johnson was healthy. But still, I just thought it wasn't dynamic enough. It wasn't what I hoped it would be. So maybe, you know, with new coaching, we can see a little bit more from that. But good for him. I think it's always interesting when offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators move on to other schools to try their chops at head coaching. It's a different gig. I don't think people realize how being an offensive coordinator or defense coordinator is completely different than being the main man at the school when it comes to football activities.
I think it's always interesting to hear them say that, like, it's like going from being a key member of a team to being the CEO.
Yeah.
There's just so many aspects of you're not being, it's, you can be a great coach and be a terrible head coach. And it's mostly based on, are you able to really lean into that role of you have to own every bit of everything. And I mean, it'll be interesting. I always find it to be a challenge for a lot of these coordinators to make that leap. And it'll be interesting. I think Arroyo will have some success there because he came out of a place where recruiting was such a, it really has turned into the backbone, and I think that'll be good for him.
Yeah, for sure. One of the, just sticking with the Pac-12 and talking about coordinators switching to head coaching, one of the things I thought was interesting was University of Washington losing Peterson and Jimmy Lake kind of taking the reins, the defensive coordinator just staying in and getting that promotion from within. They didn't lose any recruits. They kept their whole class intact, which I thought was a real testament to what the Huskies are doing there in Seattle and the kind of guy that Jimmy Lake is, the type of leader he is. And I don't think they're going to miss a beat. I mean, I know they had a really down year this year. The Huskies did. I expected them to be challenging for the Pac-12, and they barely were bowl eligible when all was said and done, with some really bad losses on their resume. But I think everything is looking good. I was really curious to see what was going to happen with their recruiting class, but it didn't look like anyone left or flipped. I think there's still two guys that are, kind of to be determined, but it looks like all the main players are still going to be there for the Huskies. So that was interesting too, just seeing that they were able to remain on schedule with what they were wanting to do there.
Yeah. If anything, he got Covington, who I believe was once committed to the program.
Yes.
Jacoby yeah. Covington was a guy who decommitted and then recommitted to the program. And I think that's probably has a lot to do with the fact that they did keep that inter-personnel replacement with Jimmy Lake. And I think it was a testament to how good he closed.
Right. Yeah. And speaking of closing, if you're looking to really finish out the year strong, you need to head over to MyBookie and really take advantage of what they've got going on. It's the Christmas season. The 25th is just right around the corner. And MyBookie wants to make your season special with 12 days of gifts. So MyBookie is already one of the most trusted and reputable sports books in the industry. You hear us talking about them all the time. This holiday season, they're getting in the spirit of giving with 12 straight days of giveaway. That's right, 12 days of gifts a brand new gift every single day so you can take your game to the next level. They kicked off the promotion on the 14th, which was just a couple of days ago, but it's still going. We're still in the front end of it, so you still have plenty of opportunity to take advantage of this. They're giving free bets, free spins, futures, and more. While Santa has his, they've checked off their list. They've got a little something for everyone, and in this promotion, you won't want to miss, especially with the NBA and NHL in full swing. We've got the bowl games, of course, coming right around the corner, which we are going to be previewing very soon. The holiday season is here. So parlays, teasers, specials, anything you could ever ask for, MyBookie is here to make Christmas great. Head over to mybookie.ag right now and use the promo code ROTOVIZ to get half of your initial deposit in free wagers. And that's just the start of your savings. Make sure to check out the site during this promotion because they're going to be doing something new every single day. You want to take advantage of these deals. Again, you're going to want to go to mybookie.ag and use our code ROTOVIZ and start winning today. Now, Matthew, before we get into our picks, our locks, let's just talk a little bit about some of these big bowl games that we have coming up. We did a really quick overview the other day. Let's jump into it now. Let's start off with a game that you said you were really looking forward to, Minnesota versus Auburn. Auburn favored by 7.5 here. I'd love to know kind of where you're leaning on this one now that you've had a little bit more time to think about it. And just kind of what you think is going to take place in this match.
I think this is probably a situation where Auburn's defensive line overwhelms. I'll be interested to see in the lead up if they have any players that decide to sit out because it is sort of a quote unquote meaningless bowl game. But there are going to be a few elements. I think this is a game where if you're going to take Minnesota, you want them to hit early because the best path for them to win is where they have a few explosive plays and Auburn is forced to lean on Bo Nix to bring them back. With that being said, I think Auburn's going to take it. I do think they'll probably cover the spread of 7.5. And I think it'll be a Whitlow game. I don't think it'll be Bo Nix. I think it'll be low scoring. I'm not sure what the over under is on it. I think if I had to guess, it's probably somewhere in the 40s.
It's 53.
It's what?
53.
Oh, 53. Bet the under. Auburn is a great under team because they play great defense and run the ball. Bet the under.
Yeah. I don't think these two teams have ever played each other, at least not in a long time. So that's kind of fun. It's Minnesota's a fun team. I mentioned earlier in the season that they've become a team that I've rooted for. I think just hearing you and Jordan talk up their receivers so much, it's been fun watching them. And Auburn, of course, they spat in my soup to start the year, so to speak. I don't know if that's an expression. I'm pretty sure it's not. I was disappointed with Oregon losing them to start the year. So I'm definitely hoping that they can't handle it. But against the spread this year, Auburn is 9-3, while Minnesota is 6-4-2. I also think that, I think it's going to be a close game, but that 7 points doesn't seem maybe to be enough. Well, I guess it's 7.5. I'm going to go with Minnesota on this one. This is not a lock for me. I didn't do a whole lot of research, but I think Minnesota can keep it close. I know they got just completely outmanned by Wisconsin, but I think they'll be able to hang a little bit tougher with Auburn. Bo Nix didn't travel quite as well as he played when he was at home. So maybe road Nix isn't up for what Minnesota wants to do here. So I'm kind of leaning that way, but I don't have a real strong take on this one. Where do you want to go next? What's another game you're really looking forward to?
Let's climb right up our board we got in front of us. So Utah -7 against Texas. Screw you, Utah. I'm mad at you. Stop trying to troll us with stupid tweets saying the University of Utah. Shut up. No one cares about you. With that being said, I do kind of like them in this spot. I think Texas is really overrated. And I don't see a reason why why Tom Herman's going to be able to get his team motivated coming into this game. He essentially fired or demoted all of the meaningful parts of his defensive staff and brought in a replacement, but I don't think the replacement Chris Ash is going to be leading them. I think this is a spot where Utah is kind of able to score however they want to. I don't think Texas's offense is going to be super high powered. They do have one guy like Devin Duvernay. If he breaks off a couple of explosive plays, maybe they keep it close. But we've talked about it in the past. Utah's defense is really solid. I'd like them to win this one, and probably in a higher scoring game than Utah has been traditionally doing. Yeah, I'm mad at them right now, so I don't want to like fully lean into Utah, but yeah, Utah's going to take it probably kind of comfortably.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. This is actually a lock for me, so I'll give my some of my little I hate the word nugget, so I'm not going to use it. I'll give some of my reasons for why I'm going with Utah on this one. But I think you said it really well. I do think Texas is a bit overrated. And we talked about Utah last week when we were talking about the Oregon game, the Pac-12 championship game. And if they didn't start off with such miserable luck, you know, missing a fourth down, getting a blocked punt, the whole outcome of that game could have been different. They ended up climbing back into it in the second half before Oregon shut the door on them with that, you know, 75-yard Verdale touchdown run. Actually, it was only a 70-yard run. But before that, I just think they got a little unlucky. I don't think that happens against Texas. I think they're going to be able to hang in there early, and then just, you know, I think as the game goes on, they're going to just increase that lead. I think at halftime it might be, you know, we might be sweating this one, but by the end, when it's all said and done, Utah will be, you know, leading with a very comfortable margin. And I don't think the touchdown is really going to come into play. So this is a lock for me. I'll give you a little bit more later. Georgia.
Screw you, Utah.
Hey, it was good for Oregon, and that's what matters.
I don't care. I'm mad at them. They suck.
Georgia -6.5 versus Baylor. This one's interesting. I think the over under on this game is like 41. So Vegas is anticipating a 41.5, excuse me. Vegas is anticipating a very low scoring affair. So what do you think? 6.5 points in a low scoring game, most likely. Where are you leaning on this?
See, this one to me feels like the spot where every year there's an SEC team that comes out flat and just looks terrible. And I want this to be the spot. This is the one where I kind of think that they will come out flat. Honestly, this is probably my least favorite game. I may have last week said it was one of my favorites, but I'm going to be honest. I hate this game. Unless they somehow unleash Jake Fromm and let him be a good quarterback, this game's going to be incredibly boring because Georgia's defense is really good on the back end traditionally, and they do get decent pass rush. They did against LSU, which just Joe Burrow is a G. But I don't know who's going to be playing quarterback for Baylor in this game. I really hope it's not Zeno because they won't be able to score points. I think there's a chance Georgia pulls a shutout in this game. 41 may honestly not be low enough, and I wouldn't be shocked if that number gets down under 40. You might be looking at a 39.5 by kickoff.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I would take Georgia. I think they win in a shutout.
Wow. That is a bold call there.
Is it
a shutout? Yeah. I mean,
who's good on Baylor?
Mims? Yeah, they've got that. Yeah.
Who's throwing Mims the ball?
That's a good point. That's a really good point. That's fair. But you saw what they did to that vaunted Sooner defense.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
The defense that's been given credit by saying they're average this year.
Right, right. I think Baylor is going to struggle. I lean Georgia -6.5 in this one. But yeah, I don't know if a shutout's in the cards, but I do think it'll be a low scoring game.
Baylor scoring negative points in this game.
There you go. Okay. I think
I'm off the rails.
I think
tonight.
You need to take that one to the bank right there. I'm sure you can get some good action on that. Let's head over to the Citrus Bowl. We've got Michigan, Alabama. 7 is the number. This one is on my card, and I'm super nervous about it because you were talking about how sometimes SEC teams can come out flat. I'm nervous, a little nervous about the potential of that happening for Bama. Where are you laying on this one?
This was the spot where I expected that it was going to be the Jalen Waddle show because I thought that Judy would sit out. I thought Smith would sit out. I thought Ruggs would sit out. So far, all of them are playing, and I'm sort of flabbergasted by it. Now, I won't be surprised if this is a spot where they're playing with like heavy air quotes around it, and that they pull them as soon as they can. And by as soon as they can, I don't necessarily mean when the game is in hand. It's when they do something that makes the game worthy for them.
Sure.
But I want Michigan to win. And that hurts me in my core that I want them to win this game. But man, I think Alabama's a decent team. I think Mac Jones is takes them back to a bygone era of Alabama when they're just trying to score enough on offense. They're not trying to blow teams up, but they're trying to score enough. And I don't want to pick it. I'm picking Michigan. I don't care. I'll take them. I'm going to feel dirty. I'm going to go have to shower after this. I'm taking Michigan to cover.
Who's the best quarterback on the field in this game?
Shea Patterson, by a mile.
By a mile.
I actually think Shea I think we have to give credit to where it's due. I think as the season progressed.
Because you were
started
hater.
To. I hate Shea Patterson. He plays for Michigan. What do you want me to do?
No, no, but you didn't think he was a very good quarterback.
I didn't. And at the beginning of the year, he wasn't. Now, I also think it showed that Shea Patterson does a Shea Patterson thing every game. He did it against Ohio State with the fumble, and he throws a pick. He'll make one or two stupid plays in this game, but I actually think Alabama's defense is still beatable. They have not been really this defensive juggernaut. They let up 40 points against, was it 40 against Auburn? Like, they let up an absurd amount of points against an Auburn offense that isn't very good.
Two picks they let up, that game, but yes.
I don't care. They still let up a ton of, like, they let up more than three touchdowns to an Auburn team that isn't very good. I think my reasoning on this is essentially Shea Patterson did progress. My concern is that they did have one wide receiver who is talented. He hasn't been super productive, but they had a talented wide receiver leave the program in Tariq Black. But I think that guys like Nico Collins and Peoples Jones, they do see the benefit of this being a spot where they're on a big stage and a big performance against a vaunted SEC defense could actually help their stock entering the draft season. So I won't be shocked if Michigan's passing attack finds a decent amount of success. And yeah, I'm taking Michigan as pretty much because I don't want to pick Mac Jones.
Yeah. I'm sticking with Bama, as I said. It's
reasonable.
This is a lock for me, and I'll give you some of my reasons why later. But Bill Connolly's article, did you see that today on Twitter?
No.
Basically, it's just like the narrative, like how this could roll out. And, you know, it's like one of two things could happen, you know. And his whole thing is that fear that Bama just doesn't show up because, like, it's the Citrus Bowl, and they were wanting to play in a playoff game. So, but you never know what's going to happen. They could also be like, you know what? Let's finish this on a high note. Let's let all the guys leave on top, you know, and we're the better team. Let's go stomp Michigan into the dirt. So we'll see. Whenever those narratives, I find it really difficult to buy into because while hindsight can maybe show us what happened, it's impossible to predict what's going to happen. Like it could be either side of that coin. And I'm just going to stick with who I think the better team is. And yeah, Bama with a touchdown feels right to me. Wisconsin, Oregon, Rose Bowl. Oregon is an underdog, 2.5 points underdog, in fact. Where are you landing on this one?
I don't know, to be honest. This one's a close one for me. I think the best player on the field is on Wisconsin's side. Even if I'm not the biggest fan of Jonathan Taylor, I do think he's the best player in this game.
I thought you were going to say Cone.
No, it sucks. I think Wisconsin proved that they're capable of playing a slightly confusing defense. In both games against Ohio State, they were able to confuse Fields by changing up their scheme. And I'm going to hurt your feelings here and say Justin Herbert isn't as good as Justin Fields, and their running backs, as good as they are and as good as they've been this season, they're not quite the level of J.K. Dobbins, and I don't think you're going to find the success running the ball enough to wear out Wisconsin. With that being said, I think it's a close game. I think I'm going to take Wisconsin just because I think this is a spot where Oregon could, like, Oregon's either going to come out buzzsaw or they're going to come out flat, and I don't think there's really much of a middle ground. I'm going to bet on Justin Herbert not being that good.
Sure. I think that's fair. And I don't think Justin Herbert is the reason why I'm picking Oregon here. It's our offensive line. I mean, Dobbins was able to carve this team up not too long ago. I think he had 170 yards rushing or something like that. And while, yes, I think Dobbins is a superior running back than Verdell or Dye, I think our offensive line is one of the best in the country, and it'll be a fun matchup to see just to see what happens on the line of scrimmage, both on offense and defense for both these teams, because it's really strength versus strength. And it'll be exciting to see what can happen. I think Justin Herbert's going to need to make a couple of big throws. And if he can do that, I think Oregon will win this game. It's going to be a good one. It's going to be, like you said, I think it's close. I think it's the right number. I think -2.5 for Wisconsin sounds about right to me. But I wouldn't have been.
It's moving up. So if you do on Oregon, keep waiting, because the line is now in some spots up as high as 3.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. I don't have this one as a lock. I don't often put money on Oregon actually winning games. Over unders is where I like to play with Oregon, but even that trend they're not really in the under category as much anymore. They've been scoring a lot of points and giving up a lot of points. The one thing that scares me is just that Arizona State game. They fought so hard to get back into it, but it was too little too late. And if they struggle early and Wisconsin gets out to a lead, that could be difficult, because as explosive as the Oregon offense can be, they're a run first football team, and they have been for a long time. And people forget that because of what Marcus Mariota was doing. And even Herbert, people want to see, they assume that there's these huge passing numbers, but the offense really does run around the running game. So if they're not able to come out sharp, it could be a rough game, but I think they'll be good. I think they'll be motivated, ready to play. It's a Rose Bowl. I'm sure they're disappointed that they're not in the playoff, but I mean, this is huge. It's a big one. I don't think anyone's, disappointed that they're not playing in a good bowl game, because this is the granddaddy of them all after all. So, it'll be fun. I'm really excited for it. I think it'll be, it'll be good. I'm going to go ahead and say Oregon wins outright. So, but I'm very rarely a rah-rah Oregon homer, but today I am.
I feel the same way about Ohio State.
Yeah, but you always feel like Ohio State's going to win.
It's because I'm lying.
Okay, let's get to the lesser of the two playoff games, Clemson versus LSU. Big number on this one. LSU favored by 2 touchdowns. The line is up to 14. I think it was actually at 16 at one point, and it's down to 14. Where are you landing on this one?
That number's huge. I want to be on Oklahoma's side. I just want to put this out there. Before I go into tearing down Oklahoma, I want to be on their side. I'm taking LSU. My reasoning, I don't think Oklahoma has any room for error in this game. If they come out slow like they did last year against Alabama, they'll get run off the field. If they have a turnover in a bad spot, they'll get run off the field. If they get stopped on back-to-back drives, they'll get run off the field. LSU's offense is not going to get stopped by an average defense. They're probably only going to get stopped by super-duper like elite defenses, and even they're going to struggle against them. And then to top it all off, Oklahoma's going to be running pretty much exclusively Kennedy Brooks in this game, because I can't say his name. Ramondre Stevenson,
right,
was suspended. Yeah. Trajan Bridges was suspended. He's a freshman wide receiver. And Ronnie Jones was suspended, who is their top pass rusher. They're in trouble. So their really average defense lost its top pass rusher. So I don't exactly see how they're getting a stop in this game. If you're an LSU backer, you do need to be a little bit concerned. It sounds like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is banged up. Maybe this is the first time we see John Emery get any significant run. If it is, I don't know if he's better. I think Edwards-Helaire is pretty good. But I just don't see anyone on Oklahoma's defense that is able to stop Jefferson or Chase. And when that's the case and they're not getting a substantial pass rush, I don't see a way where Oklahoma is really getting more than one or two stops the entire game. And I think LSU's defense, as mediocre as it is, will be able to force Jalen Hurts into one of his turnovers.
Yeah, and he does have a tendency to turn the ball over. But like you said, this is
worth noting. How the hell was he the second best player in the country this year? That was garbage. Yeah. Him getting second in the Heisman is absolute garbage. Sorry, Jalen Hurts. I know I picked you preseason. Garbage.
Who would you have voted for? What order?
It would have been Chase Young second.
You would have gone Burrow first.
I would have gone. Yeah. I mean, Burrow was the winner. He deserved to win. I do think that people overlook Justin Fields and how good he really was, but I think Chase Young was the best player in the country, but he was not the most outstanding player in the country. And that's a little bit weird, but I think that Joe Burrow blowing up every record in the book was absolutely worthwhile. But I mean, Jalen Hurts tried to lose them games on several occasions, so I don't understand how he got second. I would have put him fourth of the bunch there, and heck, I probably would have put Dobbins ahead of him. I might have put Jonathan Taylor ahead of him.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done that because they're not quarterbacks, but no, I'm just kidding.
Well, and then I also,
Yeah, no, I think the turnovers could be a huge problem if they, you know, rear their ugly head in this one. It could be over pretty early for Oklahoma. And while I don't think the outcome, though, I think we're going to be pretty clear on LSU winning this game throughout. I think Oklahoma is going to be able to keep it between 10 and 17. Maybe it'll dip down to 20 at one point, but then they'll fight their way back into it. And I think they end the game getting a backdoor cover. And therefore I'm picking Oklahoma because the number is just so big. This is another one that I have in my lock. So I'll give you a couple more, reasons why in a minute. Let's get to the main event here. As far as you're concerned, Clemson versus Ohio State.
As far as everyone's concerned,
as far as the world is concerned, Clemson versus Ohio State. The line hasn't been moving too much since you locked it in last week. So has anything changed for you since we recorded however long ago?
No, but I actually have money on it now. So last weekend after recording, I had to go out and cash some Florida Atlantic Conference Championship tickets. And while I was there, I said, well, I'm here. I'm a homer. I'm going to go put some money down on Ohio State money line. Now, this is where I was stupid, because had I waited until today, I would have gotten, I might not have gotten much better odds, but I got at plus 106, so barely above even for them to win. And
looks like it's looking like
106.
Now.
Yeah, I'm seeing 115 in certain books, but had I waited till kickoff, there's a chance that money line number goes a little bit higher. And I feel like I should explain to our listeners why I went money line and not taking points. If Ohio State loses by 1 point, and I win that ticket, I have no desire to go out and drive out to a casino, which is 45 minutes away, and cash a ticket when I'm angry about the results. So to be honest, I only want to go there with a celebratory ticket. Yes. And yeah, now I do think we have to point out the disrespect Ohio State has gotten in this game. Not only is basically everybody picking Clemson, a lot of people are thinking that this won't even really be a game, and that most of the Vegas sharp money has actually come in on Clemson. I don't think people really understand how dominant Ohio State was and the amount of effort they had to put into the final 3 weeks of the year by comparison to what Clemson did. I get it. Clemson was also very dominant, and the way that Ohio State beat teams middle of the year was very comparable to the way that Clemson was beating teams. The difference is, everyone all of a sudden decided Ohio State sucked when they were beating top 10, top 12, top 15 teams in a row by double digits. And it's sort of funny because Clemson hasn't beaten anybody that was at the caliber of Wisconsin. Clemson hasn't beaten anybody that was at the caliber of Penn State. And Clemson hasn't beaten anybody the caliber of Michigan. But everyone is certain that they will come out there and be the better team that night. I think this Clemson team is a very good team. I think in a lot of years you could have made a case that they were the number one team in the country. I think that Ohio State has been disrespected. I think it was laughable that Grant Delpit won the Thorpe Award over Jeffrey Okuda when their pass defense was garbage this year. I think it was laughable that ESPN forgot to mention Ohio State among DBU conversation when they've had just as many first round picks taken as all of them. And I think it is laughable that every one of the CBS experts, except for one who just recently changed it, is taking Clemson. Ohio State's team is not getting enough respect. Not only are they a live dog, I think they should probably be a slight favorite.
Yeah, I actually agree with you, which is hard to say.
I only am wrong when I rant every once in a while.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, which team is ranked number two? Which team is ranked number three? Like, it's, I mean, I know that's kind of arbitrary at this point because they're all undefeated, but there's a reason why Ohio State is ranked ahead of Clemson. It's because they had a much more challenging path to get here, and they took care of business, and they've got just as much talent. I mean, they've got the best player. I mean, the best player on the field is wearing a Buckeye jersey. You know, like, Chase Young is going to be the best player on that field. And I know Lawrence is amazing, but Fields is no slouch. You know, you've got Etienne, you've got Dobbins. There's a lot. This is going to be a really fun game for the neutral viewer like myself. And I'm shocked it's not a pick 'em, to be honest with you. And I know two is a small number, or 2.5 where it started. But I agree. I think it is pretty crazy that people are just already, penciling in Clemson for the national championship game. I think, you know, history is on their side lately with, you know, their big performances against Alabama and just, you know, how they were able to take care of business over the past few seasons. But Ohio State's been right there too. So I'm with you. I think this is going to be a great game. If I was betting on this one, I would go, because I think it should be a pick 'em, I would go with the points, and I would bet on Ohio State too. So I think that's the right call, but I don't actually have a play on that, but that is one of your locks. So why don't you give us, unless if you want to say a little bit more about that lock of Ohio State.
Well, that was my lock last week that I had on there. I think that Ohio State could justifiably be a favorite, and probably I would recommend taking the money line because I think there's a decent chance they win outright.
Right.
So
yeah. Now give me another one. That's let's move on to these locks here.
Let's jump into Central Michigan, San Diego State over 40.
That's a low number.
San Diego State is 1-11 against the number on overs. That sucks. But because of that, the number's 40. Central Michigan was 9-4 on overs on the year. And of their 11 games this year, 10 of them went over a total of 40. S&P Plus has this game at 43.3, a little bit closer than I would hope, but I also do think that the Central Michigan team is pretty well coached right now, and I think they'll be able to score some points.
I like it. I'm going to go with one of my overs. I've got Buffalo versus Charlotte, which I think is our very first of the bowl games, and I'm going over. The number I saw was 51.5. I've seen it all over the place, actually, but the total has gone over in 5 of Buffalo's last 5 games, and for Charlotte, 10 of their last 15 games. Both teams average about 31.5 points per game. I think one is like 31.5 and one is 31.58. So they're both, you know, scoring lots of points. Both offenses can move the football. So to me, I feel like I'm getting a pretty good number here. So that's my first lock, is the over in Buffalo versus Charlotte. Back to you, Matthew.
I'm going to go with I'm rooting against Jeff Hafley's team. So I'm taking Cincinnati -7 against Boston College. Boston College is playing with an interim head coach. Like I said, their current head coach, Jeff Hafley, is not coaching their team. He's worried about Clemson right now. Also, Boston College, their entire offense pretty much revolves around one player. That player's name is A.J. Dillon, and they run the ball 67.5% of their plays. A.J. Dillon's not playing. And that, like I said, pretty much the center of their offense. S&P Plus has UC as a 14.8-point favorite in this game, and their defense tends to be pretty good, whereas Boston College defense tends to be a little bit porous this season. I think this is a spot where Cincinnati is able to get up by about 10 and will bleed the clock by running the ball with a combination of Michael Warren and Ritter.
All right. I like it. That was a very convincing argument. Just for the record, the lock that I had from last week is SMU -3 versus FAU. FAU also, you know, their coach is also gone off to Mississippi, Ole Miss, that is. So I'm going SMU -3. That was from last week, so that one's already on the docket. But if I had to tell you that there's a team out there that I have been super negative on all year, and they're 7-point favorites against a team that we both thought was very exciting, I think you know where I'm going on this one. Oklahoma State +7 versus Texas A&M. I don't think Texas A&M is all that good. I think Oklahoma State...
What?
I think Oklahoma State has the capabilities, and I think not only to keep this close, but even to possibly win this game outright. Oklahoma State is 9-3 against the spread in the last 12 games. Oklahoma State is also 4-0-1 against the spread in the last five games against Texas A&M. They are 8-1 in their last game as an underdog, and it's tough to pass getting 7 points in this one. So Oklahoma State plus 7 versus Texas A&M team that I think is overrated. I think just like kind of how you feel about Texas is how I feel about Texas A&M. So yeah, give me those 7 points, and I'll take it to the bank with Oklahoma State.
Well, I like that you went with a team that you don't like and just picking against them. I'm going to go super narrative street here, and I think you'll enjoy this one. Is it fun to root for coaches that are retiring, not because they were pushed out, but because they were just a little bit bored and didn't like the spotlight?
It is.
I'm taking Washington -3.5 against Boise State. S&P Plus has this game as a 10.8-point favorite. Washington is quietly top 10 in offensive S&P Plus. They're going to be able to score a decent amount of points in this game. And with Chris Peterson leaving, I think the Huskies come out there a little more fired up than they do for some of their regular season spots. Don't see any real chance for a letdown here. I do think it'll be high scoring, though. I think this will be a fun game. I'm going to say that Washington wins this game by a touchdown.
I wanted to put this one on, but I can't bet on Boise games because I said I wasn't going to. I am not allowed to vote to bet on Boise or Iowa games because of statements I've made on this podcast. But I think you're on the right side of this. I think the players are fired up. I also think like Jacob Eason has a lot to prove. If he wants to be taken seriously as an NFL prospect, he needs to have a good, solid performance here because his season was very inconsistent. But we've seen Washington when they're dialed in, when they're right, they are a very, very good offense. I think this is a really good pick. And Peterson going in his last game, he gets to go against his old team, which is kind of fun too. So I like that one. Let's keep it in the Pac-12 for me. I'm going Utah -6 versus Texas. Texas, as an underdog this season, was 0-5. Those are not great numbers. Utah is 8-1 straight up and against the spread in their last nine games as a favorite. That one loss we all know about all too well. We've mentioned it already, my Oregon Ducks. But I think Utah's a really, really solid team. Jordan's been talking about them all year. You've been talking about them all year. The offense, defense, special teams, they are just a very well-rounded, balanced team. I think Moss is going to have a really great game. Texas doesn't scare me. They've got so many injuries that they're dealing with still. And Ellinger's just been a disappointment. And 6 points is not a big number. So I think Utah comes out and plays well. I know they were hoping for a playoff, but a team like Utah where they're not really in the national spotlight as much as teams like, you know, Alabama and Michigan, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. I think they're going to be ready to get up for this game, go out and put on a good show. And I think Utah takes this one pretty comfortably.
I like that one. I'm going to go one that's a little bit brand, even though I'm going to take a side instead of a total. Ooh. Liberty is catching 4 points against Georgia Southern. S&P Plus actually has Liberty as a favorite in this game. Liberty features one of my favorite players in the entire country, Antonio Gandy-Golden, and have been relatively explosive at on the passing side. If I know they're playing without Buckshot Calvert at quarterback this game, but Gandy-Golden's still there. He can catch the ball from anyone throwing it. My issue with Georgia Southern, they run the ball 79% of plays. And they're a team that is really snail pace. If Georgia Southern falls behind early, they're going to have a very difficult time catching up. I think this is a spot where Liberty jumps out early, catches Georgia Southern sleeping a little bit. And when they're ahead, Georgia Southern's going to have a difficult time playing from behind the whole game.
Would you go money line on this one? Or is that 4 points?
Maybe.
Is that
I'm not, the problem is I'm not, like, Liberty's not a good team, but they've got good pieces.
Yeah.
And the problem is that they could just as easily lose this game by 3 by being bad on defense. But I think that there's a chance that, plus 145 is a decent spot. I probably would at that number. Yeah. Plus one. Yeah. If you see it anywhere above plus 145, you can probably get it as high as plus 160 in some spots. I don't hate it. I just think that there's a spot for Liberty here. If you're doing like a bowl pick'em and you're looking for somewhere to be a little bit contrarian, Liberty's a spot to be contrarian.
I like that. That's a good one. My next one, I'm going BYU -2 versus Hawaii. The Cougars are 23-8 all time against the Warriors, including last year's 49-23. win. BYU are 4-1 against the spread in their last five games against Hawaii. So I feel like those are all kind of leaning me in the right direction here. I know BYU has struggled of late, and Hawaii, it's a tough one. Hawaii is at home. This is in Hawaii, of course. But I feel like BYU is gonna get the best of them here. Hawaii are 1-4 against the spread when playing as an underdog this year. So just another little trend there that I feel comfortable with. So BYU -2 is my next one.
All right, I'm gonna go with one with a team of players that just got arrested. Utah State, Kent State. Utah State had a bunch of players arrested for weed over the weekend, which is sort of funny. Because it shouldn't matter. So both of these teams are bottom 50 in offensive S&P plus, which is sort of a strange thought when you realize how good Utah State was on offense last year. They fell off with the loss of Matt Wells, and Jordan Love has not really been as good this year. Fun fact, he was one of the players that also got arrested.
He might not be playing, though. They don't know for sure yet, though, right?
They said he is. As of earlier today, I thought they said he was going to play.
Okay.
Both these teams are below average in yards per play. They are at 5.5. The average is 5.56, so I don't want to like lie about it and make it seem like they're way below average. But they're both slightly below average in yards per play. Kent State runs the ball 57.5% of plays. That will eat away at the clock. And when you've got a total that is in the upper 60s, you don't want the clock running. You want the clock to be stopped on incomplete passes or first downs. And I think there's a decent chance that Kent State struggles to really pass in this game. So I like this spot to stay low.
Yeah. There you go. I think that's a good one. I've got two left somehow. I think because I don't know how.
You missed.
I don't know what I did wrong there. Sorry about that. But they're both ones that I've.
That's all right. One of them's terrible.
They're both ones I've already talked about. I've got Bama -7 versus Michigan. I thought this was kind of surprising. Against the spread, these teams were not great. Michigan was 7-5 against the spread, and Alabama was 6-6. I did not realize that they were both. I mean, Michigan, that doesn't surprise me, but I didn't realize Bama was struggling in that category. But I think
Bama's bad.
I think it's
this
just
year.
The Tua injury, I think, affected a lot of those numbers. But still, I'm rolling with Bama on this one. I feel pretty good about that one. This is the one that makes me a little bit nervous after reading Bill Connolly's article. So if you believe in the in narrative street with people coming out flat because it's not the type of bowl game that they were hoping for, maybe don't do that one. But I don't, and I'm going to roll with that one. My last one is Oklahoma +14. As I mentioned, LSU was the number 3 offense in the country. We all know that. But did you know that Oklahoma was number 5? I think OU can lose big and still get that backdoor cover, like I said. And this is crazy. Statistically, the University of Oklahoma had a better pass defense than LSU. You may not think that given what we see and hear on the news. But of course, a lot of that is also because OU gives up 1 million yards a game on the ground. However, with those things in mind, I think Oklahoma is able to keep it close enough. Oklahoma are 5-1 against the spread in the last 6 games as an opponent when facing the SEC. They are 7-2 in the last 9 when playing as an underdog. So I think those trends kind of are nice to look at when looking at Oklahoma in this spot as both an underdog playing the SEC with such a huge number. I know you pointed out that Stevenson is going to be out for the Sooners, but I think most of their damage is going to come in the passing game anyway, and Kennedy Brooks and Jalen Hurts will be able to run the ball enough to keep things respectable to open up some of that play action. So I feel pretty good about this one just because the number is really big. If this number continues to go down and we're looking at +12, I'm going to avoid it. I want those two touchdowns in my favor in order to feel comfortable. So at 14, I still feel good. I see you have added one to the list here. Let's hear your last one, Matthew.
This is a pure effort. I wanted to balance it out, and it's a team that I haven't gotten to pick much this year. I'm going to go Wyoming and Georgia State over 48. S&P Plus has this game at 55. I like that spot. Wyoming's not a terrible team. I don't think they're good, but I also don't think they're bad. So I think they're going to be able to score some points against Georgia State. Yeah.
I like it. So I think...
Sorry, that was really, really, really generic and terrible analysis, but that's about how
Well, it's a low number. You know, 48 is a pretty low number for college football standards. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I think I need to go 5-2 this week to end the year at 500, and I plan on going 7-0, so it's perfect. I'll have a nice end to the college football season.
On and write down the numbers.
It'll be good.
I got to pull those numbers up and see. I think I just have to not go like 0-6.
Right, yeah. You've had a nice strong year.
0-7.
You've had a strong year. But, you know, you for the title versus you and Jordan, like, you got to keep your winning percentage up, you know? Like,
Well, Liberty's winning outright. Washington's winning by 54. Right. Ohio State's winning outright. Central Michigan's going to score 100 points on their own.
You got this locked.
Utah State is going to leave Jordan Love at home because he smells of weed. And then somehow Kent State still won't be able to score. And then Wyoming is just going to – they might not want my
No, I like it. I think it's good. Yeah, we've got Christmas next week. And then, of course, after that, we have New Year's. We will be back with you sometime in 2020, within the first couple of days, I imagine. So you won't have to wait all that long, but we are going to enjoy the holidays with our families and have a grand old time watching football. And we will be back to speak with you all in the new year. Matthew, is there anything you want to leave the good people with?
Keep an eye out on RotoViz. It looks like there's going to be a prospect preview series starting to roll out over the next few days.
Yes, I was going to mention that. Thank you so much. I know you are, you're writing up on Etienne, right? I'm pretty sure.
I've got a few people marked down. Etienne's one of them. I'm going to talk trash about him. I'm kidding. He's my running back one. But yeah, I will have an article out on Etienne in the next couple of days.
Yeah, I'll be writing a couple of those too. Not near as many as Matt, I'm sure. But I'll be getting in there as well. So yeah, do be checking for those. You can find those over on RotoViz. And of course, I'm sure we'll be tweeting those out from our accounts and from the RotoViz account as well on Twitter, the RotoViz College Football Podcast account on Twitter as well. So be looking for those. Enjoy football. Enjoy the new year. Enjoy Christmas. Enjoy all the things. Have an awesome day. Matthew, thank you so much. A pleasure as always, my friend. I will speak to you. Well, I was going to say I'll speak to you in the new year, but I know we'll be texting back and forth.
You'll speak to me after the Ohio State win.
We'll be going back and forth for sure. Cool. Well, that's it for now. We will talk to you all again next year.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.